So I want to get on and hear a little bit about cabozantinib, but first, just to pick up on that point that Dr. Figlin made, Dr. McDermott, can you talk about your vision of how high-dose IL-2 works and what would happen in your mind, at least in the mechanistic level, if you combine that with one of these two agents?
Well, sort of at a crude level, we think of IL-2 as, you know, a substance that activates T cells, CD8, NK T cells, and it's sort of like putting your foot on the accelerator of the immune system, getting these cells to do more. The problem is with IL-2 is it also drives regulatory T cells. It's actually probably better at driving regulatory T cells than it is at the other effector cells that you want to drive to the tumor. So it's associated with toxicity. It probably shuts off its own effect in some patients. There are limits to its benefit. I agree with Bob that we should be looking at different doses and schedules of the agent when we talk about combinations. But we might also look at different agents that work in a similar way that are immune stimulators. Other forms of IL-2, so for example, that are in clinical development that don't drive a regulatory T cell response as much. Other immune agents like IL-21, anti-CD137 antibody, those agents that are actually in phase 1 and 2 trials that may be more rational to combine with checkpoint blockade. I think all of that should be done. I think that's why the results of ASCO were so interesting, because when you talk about making big leaps, the leaps that I want to make are not in progression-free survival, are not in response rate. It's the tail of the curve, you know, and to get patients to the tail in remission, we generally think of having to drive the responses deeper, creating more complete responses. We saw that with the CTLA-4 blockade and PD-1. We also saw that in a smaller study with GM-CSF and IPI, which was a cooperative group melanoma trial. So the hope for those of us who believe in immune therapy is we can rationally combine these agents. However, it's hard to model this stuff in mice. These agents are much more active in humans than they are in mice. So we have to do the human trials, and finding people who are motivated and willing to go on them is going to be a challenge when there's other agents available, but there's hope. You know, the way I look at it is IL-2 sort of proved the principle that certain solid tumors could be put into remission, but we need to go beyond that. We need to have much more tolerable agents that impact more patients, and maybe we can do something with selection, because that's the biggest piece that's missing as far as determining whether a checkpoint inhibitor is going to get approved. It's which population do you test it in? If you knew right now, like in the BRAF story, who was going to respond, you could sit here and guarantee that PD-1 would be approved in lung and in renal and in all these other places. We don't quite know that yet. And based on the current FDA guidelines, it may be hard for some of these things to get done. But what I would say to the FDA, if I could convince them, is I would say, let's focus on the tail of the curve. Let's focus on treatment-free survival. Let's focus on remissions. And to get there, you need to, at least right now, it's either surgery or immune therapy. It's the only way to get there. And that should be an approvable endpoint in my book.